got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. Feeling. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. Tonight's the night. Let's live it up. I got my money. Let's spin it up. Go out and smash it. Like, oh my God. Jump out that sofa. Let's kick it off.
I know that we'll have a ball if we get down and go out and just lose it all. I feel stressed out, I wanna let it go. Let's go way out, faced out, losing all control.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is Michael of Benicia. And what was your website just one more time with the dash in it?
Self-realization with an S.com.
There we go. Self-realization with an S.com. Okay. Whew. All right. Now, in terms of health, there's a number of different ways of it. You know, there's physical health and your mental health and your spiritual health and what have you. And I think what's happened to society, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me, is that all forms of health are under attack. At least for those of us slaves of the plantation. The rest of people, on the other hand, it's probably only a couple of thousand people know precisely what's going down, and will not touch GMOs, only have the finest fluoride free water and continue to tell us all that it's good for us while not practicing what they preach, like the royal family, for instance. And I think that's a microcosm of everything. I think
it is. I agree. Have you seen any of the research that I've done on the illegitimacy of the English monarchy?
No, but frankly, I barely even need to see any research in order to think that the British monarchy is illegitimate.
Right, I agree.
Just just upon general assumption, they're illegitimate, you know?
Of course. But wouldn't you be interested in a legal argument that is without weakness, that could actually take down the crown in a court that wasn't a rigged game?
I'd be more in favour of beheading, but let's do it your way instead.
Well, what if I just attempted to whet your appetite a little bit more by saying that it would mean, if my argument is correct, it would mean that there is no valid law either in the United Kingdom of ill-gotten gains or any of Her Majesty's so-called dominions?
I'm kind of already on that playing field, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, the argument is very simple. The British laws of a king called Divinwall Molmud, they became the laws of the lands of Britain in 400 BC. And the feudal system was imposed upon them in breach of those laws by the Anglo-Saxon king Alfred the Great in, I think it was, the 9th century. And then by the time of the Anglo-Saxon Norman Rome-sponsored Norman conquest in 1066, that pretty much destroyed all of the remaining indigenous peoples of Britain who had followed the Molmutine laws. And the Molmutine laws stated that the only way that those laws could ever be suspended was by a unanimous convention of the people. Because under the Molmutine laws, the people were above the king or the lord. The king had no more rights than any other man or woman. They just had different roles and responsibilities. Now, I'm gonna cut to the chase here and say that while it's a very, very interesting read, and I have it up on the website, the Malmertine Laws can be found in the Our Stories section at selfrealization.com. It's a very interesting read, and it's certainly not the case that all of them could be applied now, but a lot of them, they have been in the past for many centuries. And the feudal system is anathema to the Malmertine Laws. In other words, it could not be ever lawfully imposed upon it, which means that no laws of any of the so-called Anglo-Saxon kings of England from the beginning to the present day, none of those laws are valid. Every single one of them is void ab initio. Every single one of them. Which means there is no, there isn't even an argument for a legitimate state in any so-called Commonwealth country.
I thought that was because of just pure logic, but you've actually found a historical legal argument in order to prove it.
That's my position, yes.
Well, I think this is a good idea, actually, because what I find strange about... You've heard of the golden rule, haven't you? The gold makes the rules. I saw this film called 3,000 Miles to Graceland, and they were these criminals. They'd just robbed a casino, and they were sitting around this table with all of this money. And one of them had died, and they were divvying up his stash. And the leader was like, no, it's like Kevin Costner. And one of the little guys doesn't like what he's saying, that he wants to keep his money, right? And so he pulls out his gun and he puts it on the table. And the leader says, "You've forgotten the golden rule." And he shoots him underneath the table. And he says, "He who has the nickel plated makes the rules." And I think that this is precisely the reason why all laws and states and institutions have been implemented and maintained, not by the rule of law, but by the golden rule of "he who has the nickel plated makes the rules."
Correct. Correct. There is no form of legitimate government except self-government. It is a myth that there is any legitimate form other than self-government.
Yeah, I saw this great picture on Facebook one time. Oh, no. Actually, it was Mark Passio. Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com showed this picture in one of his presentations. It says, statism. It's the brilliant idea that you give the government the power to kill and intimidate and steal to protect you from other people who might kill, intimidate, or steal from you.
Right.
And it's like, whoa. And this goes back to what we started off with in the beginning, is that in order to make the world a better place, you've simply got to make all those lies true. And you're not making them true again, because they were never true to be in the first place. 9/11 was never true in the first place. People had genuine reactions, but they were based on a lie. Everything's based on a lie. It's almost as if the justification from our society is a house built on sand, and it is shifting beneath our feet every moment, so long as we sit back and just realize, my God, we've got foundations of sand. The elite know this, and I think that they are getting quite concerned about the growing awareness of the human race, about their dominance, about their scumbaggery. I fear what kind of implementation of the golden rule that they'll use next in order to suppress this awakening.
Well, I've been wondering that myself, and I do think that the sudden gift of, if you can call it that, of Wi-Fi in all of the schools, so on this island, is an example of how they are ratcheting up the tyranny, because they've given it away for free, because they know that the research has already been presented to virtually every government on the planet, certainly every Western government, by the top researchers and doctors who've been looking into this subject, the effects, the potential ill effects of Wi-Fi, and they've discovered that a shockingly high proportion of pregnancies within the first 6 weeks, I think it's over 60% of pregnancies in the first 6 weeks terminate. Some women don't even notice when this happens. They just think they're having a heavy flow that month. And I know a lot of women who've been complaining of such things since the advent of Wi-Fi, whereas I never noticed it being so common before. And when you look at the research, and again, there's an article on Wi-Fi, a thalidomide in the making at selfrealization.com, which lays all of this out in great detail. The governments have rejected the research. They've refused to act. They are knowingly putting Wi-Fi in the schools to eradicate your children's chances of propagating the species, because the harm that it does to the follicles that become the ovaries in young girls, it's irreparable. And it breaks my heart to even contemplate it.
You know what? I think this is the basis of the script for the film Children of Men.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily, not quite literally, but in the film Children of Men, the entire world is infertile.
Right. I haven't seen it.
The youngest person in the world is like 28. And the whole thing is a world crumbling in on itself, breaking under its own weight, because there are no new people being born whatsoever. There is no way to replace the human race. And everybody knows in their heart that they're about to go extinct.
Well, I believe that the current birth rate in Europe is 1.1. And when I was at school, however long ago that was, it was 2.2. So it's halved since I was at school. And people need to understand, they say, oh, well, you know, it could be worse. Well, no, not really, because you've already halved the population of the planet if that continues. But it's getting worse. It's on a downward slide. It hasn't leveled off.
Yeah.
We don't have any time to wait anymore. The people need to rise up. It's as simple as that. And it's got to happen not by orchestration. It's got to happen because the will of the people is there. It is there. They just need the right catalyst.
Now, what gives people the impetus to lay their life on the line for the lives of others? For me, it was combination of fear and anger, I guess, afraid of my own extermination, and angry at the people who were concocting schemes to bring it about. That was me, at least. How do you inspire that kind of fear and anger in others is what I've been trying to figure out. And the answer is, maybe I shouldn't have been so afraid and so angry in the first place, because I've become a lot calmer since understanding a little more. And I think that's what fear and anger is propagated by, is a lack of understanding.
Totally. I was shivering under the duvet with fear at the brown envelopes that were going to be dropping on the doormat every single morning. I had Crown agencies coming after me, trying to issue legal proceedings against me for money I did not owe them, alleged debts that they couldn't corroborate in any way, shape or form, but they were threatening me with prison if I didn't capitulate. I was absolutely crapping my knickers, Vinny, and I woke up one morning and I sat up in bed and I just said, no more, I'm not going to be scared anymore, that's it. And then I was angry, and that anger, it dissipated the moment that I realized what I'd done. Is I told the Queen that she was going to assume to be the boss of me no more, and that every state agency had backed down because of the missives that I sent them, not because I was in hiding, not because they didn't try to stop me. They did. They couldn't, because I only stood on the truth. So when people are scared at the very thought of what might happen in the future. They're ignoring the moment. And that's what I realized in myself. I was living in the anxiety of what I couldn't control anyway. And because I was doing that, I was forgetting to do with the moment what I needed to do to progress in my life. And then I realized when I look back, I'd spent too much time having depression about what had happened in the past and how I would have done things differently now, because I was living in a godless, ego-driven world. I hadn't realized the true nature of this universe. I hadn't gotten anywhere near to even acknowledging that there was a creator of this universe, because I was a recovering Catholic and then a recovering atheist. And I think the two go in tandem quite often. But now, you know, there's no religion that I would ever adhere to, because it's just another mind program. But government, as many people, I think Mark Passio, Logan Rose, have both said this, any form of government is just another form, any form of acceptance of government is just another form of acceptance of a religion, of a religious doctrine, that this is what must happen, and there's no getting around it.
Yeah, I've kind of been thinking about this lately as there's stages, and it occurs to me that the people in the so-called truth movement are suffering from a form of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Most of us are, I think.
Now, I've got a couple of things that are wrong with me, like, what's my one? I'm employophobic. I have a panic attacks if I'm about to get a job. And be employed and have somebody tell me what to do. I'm policeophobic. I am deathly terrified of being arrested again. And these fears that I have paralyze me, and I've had to withdraw entirely from being in those situations where I might be employed or might be arrested, you know. And my life's actually turned out a hell of a lot better since avoiding those things, strangely enough. And what occurred to me is that losing your current view of reality, basically shattering the lie that is people's perception of reality and actually looking beyond the veil, is akin to the grief process of losing a loved one. You know, there's certain things where, you know, first you get your depression, then your anger, and then your acceptance, right? And I think this is what's happened to a lot of us, as we go from fear to anger to acceptance, then to action, and then to empowerment. And there is, you can go through that level. Some people get stuck way back here, stuck in the fear or stuck in the action or you know, but you can't go back once you've reached the empowerment stage, I think.
No, you can't. There is no going back. And I also think, certainly from my own experiences, that the most difficult periods are where you have to act to bring something about every single day. And it's relentless, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that means that you don't have the time to sit down and reflect on your actions, to learn from what's happening and to observe all of the circumstances that are arising. Because, I mean, let's face it, most people's lives are complicated by the bullshit that they don't need to have in their lives, but they have to deal with it because it's there, it's imposed upon them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like having children, you know, your life is suddenly not your own, and it's not something that you can just, you know, take a holiday from or give up on or something of that nature. It's constant, and it's inescapable, and you just have to deal with it.
Well, I'm a full-time dad, and obviously all the work I do, or most of the work I do from home. And I'll tell you a little story about my daughter, just to let you know what kind of character she is. She basically was at a bouncy castle a few months ago. And this was an indoor bouncy castle, and there were lots of three-year-olds around, and they were bouncing up and down on the castle. And there was a little boy who went up to her. Was going up to little boys and girls and pushing them down and jumping with his knees on their chests and making them cry. And he was enjoying it. You know, so I mean, who knows what he's been sitting in front of in his house to be acting like that, you know, enjoying the psychosis at that age. But anyway, obviously I saw this happen and I get to my feet and I'm just about to intervene, but my daughter had seen it and she jumped up and she said, "No, don't you do that. That's wrong." And he got up and he looked at her and he smiled and he went for her and she grabbed his arm and threw him down and said, "No, you shouldn't be here. Stop it." And she stopped him. She stopped the bully. Now, but she didn't just stop the bully. She stopped someone bullying somebody else, other people, and prevented him from getting anywhere near from bullying her. And that isn't because we've put her up to it. I've discussed what might happen in certain situations, but I haven't instructed her what to do. She did it instinctively. And if I was to identify what it is about my character which has driven me to take the course that I have, is I have no choice. I am unable and always have been to do what I'm told. I'm not going to do it. And she's the same. I haven't taught her it. And I don't believe it's genetic. She's just like, it's the natural law philosophy that Mark Passio has so eloquently expressed. Mm. We all know in our hearts what is right. Our children aren't born ignorant. They're not even born nescient. Our children are born understanding what we convey to them. And it's only when parents, they think, oh, well, they don't understand anything. It doesn't matter what we say. It doesn't matter what they overhear. It doesn't matter what they see. They don't know what it is yet. It's not true. It's not true.
Oh, they absorb everything.
Everything. From the beginning. From the first moment.
Mm.
It's also the most wonderful experience that I've ever had, being able to spend this much time with my daughter. And it breaks my heart when I think that the vast majority of parents are being forced through financial concerns to give their children to strangers, to put them into strangers' care and miss out on not only the most important years of their lives, but the most amazing years. These are the years where if you get it wrong, Their lives are going to be a mess.
Mm. Like the Jesuits said, give me a child until the age of 7 and I will give you the man, or something to that effect. And it is these formative years which I believe the establishment is attempting to literally steal from parents in order to reduce the possibility that free-thinking children can even exist anymore. The United Nations programs, Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius and whatnot, I'm sure you're aware of these, have an enormous reach into high school, primary school, and now they're reaching into kindergarten, and they're reaching even further back now into preschool, even before the children go to kindergarten, daycare, and what have you. So it's going to be like this. People will not even remember in a couple of generations' time what a family or a parent even is. They will think.
If this doesn't stop,
yeah,
that's exactly what will happen. It'll be Huxley's dystopian vision come true.
Mm. It's a dirty word, family, in the minds of the elite. Ironically, it's their family that runs everything. And this is something else. I love Mark Passio. Like, he's just got such brilliant stuff that he comes up with.
How many people can you sit down and listen to for 7 hours?
I can't. Seriously. Nobody ever. I mean, even David Icke's presentation at Wembley. I mean, one of my mates brought round his 4 DVDs. It was like a 10-hour lecture or something like that. You could listen to it, but every hour or so, you just kind of like nod off for a few minutes, and you kind of go to sleep, and then you wake up and you go, oh, okay, but Mark Passio. It's like just this attention grabbing, like yes, yeah. This intensity, this crescendo builds up, and what he's saying, I think, was about New Age BS and how there is no what they're saying and trying to indoctrinate people into this new religion where there is no objective truth, where there is no such thing as natural law, where there is no such thing as good or evil. And, oh, this was the point that I almost forgot. The elite know all of these lessons, and they know that those lessons give you power, and so it is part of their agenda to ensure that we don't get those lessons, so that none of us have any power to challenge them with.
Yeah, children are being taught how not to think, how not to think critically, how not to ask questions, just to repeat and memorize answers that are preordained, that are never investigated, and are virtually all wrong.
Yeah.
And it is so simple to teach yourself how to critically think, even if you've had your head stuck up your ass your entire life, that all you need to understand is the basics of the trivium. And once you start applying it, once you start understanding what information is, what its logical sequence is, and what the inevitable conclusion is in that order, once that happens, then nothing can be the same again. It can't be the same. You understand that the reason why the dumbing down in the education system is so advanced is because they're insisting that rhetoric is placed first at all times. So they're giving them the wrong answers, and they're telling them, shut up, just accept it.
That's
Put your hand down.
And in fact, I had this realization when I was at university. I only managed to do 2 years of it before I quit saying this entire thing is BS. When you talk to some people who are educated in university about some of these subjects that you and I discuss, subjects which have evidence that are real, that exist, that are provable, documented, etc., they're in complete denial of it. Or they say that you're crazy, or something of that nature. And a profound realization hit me. They all think that they've been taught critical thinking in university, right? But the realization was, for me, that university does not teach people to think critically. It teaches people to be critical of people who can still think.
Yes, it does. It does.
And, of course, these graduates go on to become your leaders, and they pass it on. It's like Chinese whispers, except in passing along, instead of passing along words, you're passing on insanity.
Yes, that's very true.
And the insanity gets so skewed that it's not even recognizable as insanity anymore. It's like it reaches new levels.
It does.
There's something that Alex Jones says all the time on his radio show. You just crack out laughing. The level of it, you know, the level of it. and he's right, you know. I've realized that the difference between good and evil is good characterizes itself by having restraint over itself. Evil characterizes itself by having no restraint over itself. That's why there's no upper limit to tyranny. There's no upper limit to scumbaggery. But there are many limits and examples of what good is. And I think that is what we're supposed to be here on this frickin' plane of existence, this planet. Whatever your perception tells you that you're experiencing right now at this very moment, if you ain't doing something good, then you're either helping evil to succeed, or you're helping good to die, right? Which helps the evil to succeed. It's by default, and it is because you restrain yourself from doing good rather than doing good by restraining yourself.
I think that's very well put. It also reminds me of one of my many appearances in court. I've generally appeared when I'm helping other people in legal matters, including my own family, under a power of attorney that grants me the right to act in their name and exercise a right of audience. And I was doing this in the High Court in one of the mortgage-related cases I've been fighting it since 2010. And my family's properties are on the line. They're at great risk of being stolen by the Crown for the second time in my life. And I was in the High Court with a judge who'd heard he'd let me say everything I wanted to say. He complimented me which with what I perceived as sincerity, saying that what I'd presented was erudite, that he implied that there were obviously several merits within the argument that I'd put forward, but he said that in this case he was unable to go into those merits because a court of appeal judge had refused permission to appeal on paper without a hearing, without going into any of the merits of the case. And he said, therefore, I'm unable to do anything except dismiss this as totally without merit. So I said to him, a system of justice that cannot deliver justice is void ab initio and must be struck down. And then he thanked me for the way I'd conducted myself. And this was in the High Court Chancery Division. To the best of my knowledge, this is unprecedented, but it stands as an example that I effectively declared that the courts of so-called justice on these shores are void because they are putting the interests of the banks above the law and above those of the people. Instead of protecting the people from the tyranny of the banks, they are allowing the banksters to run amok and steal from everybody with impunity. And if that is the case, why do we continue to go into those courts and ask for remedy from the representatives of tyrants? Why do we do it?
I think it's force of habit, you know?
It is.
You know, it's like it's like Pavlov's dogs.
Yeah.
To a degree, you know, we've been psychologically trained and corralled into this narrow vision or spectrum of thought. And it's very difficult to escape. It's like a single electron attempting to, shall we say, separate itself from the other electrons in the beam of a laser that is shooting in one direction and one direction only. Okay, one electron decides, you know what, I'm not going to go the same direction as all the other electrons, but he's still getting pushed along by this laser beam, isn't he? And that's the psychological difficulty of what we're dealing with. We have a laser-focused, scientific, psychological castration going on here.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But that what about all of the things that everybody who is currently living in the Matrix? What about all of the things that they can do today to help themselves step out and realize exactly what's going on for themselves? They don't need to be told. Stop watching television. Stop listening to any mainstream radio. Stop buying so-called newspapers. Look for your information online. There's enough good information out there. It doesn't take long to realize what is going on. Walk outside your front door and look up in the air. Look at what they're spraying. Look at the evidence on geoengineering and chemtrails and the poisons that they're pumping out into the stratosphere, which again are attacking fertility, they're attacking the earth, they're preventing plants from growing in the normal way. Then you've got the nuclear radiation that is pumping out of Fukushima every single minute of the day into the ocean.
Yeah. Hey, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that conversation Morpheus was having with Neo in The Matrix. And he goes, what is The Matrix? He says, The Matrix The Matrix is the tyrannical system, right?
Yeah.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us, even now in this very room. You can see it when you turn on your television, and you can hear it when you turn on your radio. You feel it when you pay your taxes.
And it's watching everything we do right in this moment.
Yeah, and I saw another great post on Facebook yesterday. It says, Big Brother is watching you. Give him a good show. And I think I'm doing that, you know. It's the Vinnie Eastwood show, you know. I'm glad that the NSA, or as the Mexicans would pronounce it, the NSA, is listening to this very, listening to us at this very moment. I mean, right now, we're pre-recording this. This is not live. So the listeners cannot listen to this while it's being recorded. But the SA that begins with an N can. And I find that actually quite wonderful because, hey, I've got audience members that I can't even calculate. Isn't that lovely? And I hope that all of you listening to us right now, at this very second, before it's even published, really appreciate the privilege that you have to get a sneak peek at this episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, which is quite fabulous indeed. We're going to break now. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, folks. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The final segment here now with Michael of Benicia. And we have had quite the conversation. I'd like to just give you the opportunity now. How has this talk been for you thus far?
It's been extremely enjoyable, even if I am a little bit bleary-eyed. I've been up for over 15 hours now, so...
Sweet mercy.
Doing well.
Okay, well, let's attempt to wrap this up as concisely as we can without cutting it too short, I guess. I wanted to talk about personal journeys and what have you, but I don't think it's actually appropriate, because what I've found is that when you generalize, you come up with a lot of really profound stuff, even if it's incorrect. Like... have you noticed that good stories, even if they're not true, can still be seen as just a really good story? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I used to work in fiction. I used to write fiction, so I understand that, yes, of course.
Of course. What do you think are some of the most important, perhaps, fictional lessons that people really need to wake up to?
Fictional lessons?
Yeah.
That's a very interesting question. Well, I think they need to learn to empathize with their child by projecting themselves 25 years into the future and imagining what kind of life their child is going to have if they do not start to take action to prevent the tyranny which is running amok from taking total, absolute control of every single aspect of life on Earth. And I think if people imagine themselves sitting in a grey, soulless tower block with thousands upon thousands of other people in a chemical sky, and if they imagine their children have been subjected to such chemical annihilation that they have no possibility of having children of their own, they have no possibility of ever not doing what they're told by the state, they have no freedom to do anything at all that isn't state controlled. And if they think that lesson, that fictitious lesson, is not worth learning because there is no possibility of that type of dystopia coming about on this planet, they need to either pull their head from the sand or to pull it from their ass, because that's how they're living their life. And it happens to us all. There isn't anybody who isn't part of the control mechanisms, who hasn't been programmed, who hasn't been, who suffered from social engineering. Even those of us who virtually rebelled from the very beginning and never done what we were told. You know, I bought the false left-right paradigm for 25 years of my life. You know, I thought that maybe that leads me to another important fictitious lesson that I learned. The lesson from the false left-right paradigm. That there's one common denominator in every single so-called political ideology. They're all fictions because they all hide one salient factor. Every one of them has a central bank, and is that central bank is bank's power and influence and control is unaffected by a government that is communist being replaced by a government that is corporatist. There is no difference.
Can you feel a change around you? Not just in yourself, but in everything, in everybody.
I can't, yes. Every fibre of my being feels like mankind has never had the opportunity that it has in this moment to rise up and do something better.
I think that a lot of people have this this sensation. It's very hard to describe what it is. It's like a cross between a heart palpitation, a mosquito bite, and tripping balls on ecstasy. It itches you, it hurts you, and it overpowers you with love at the same time.
Yes.
That's what it is. Very mild. It's right there, and I feel it. And it's tension, but tension that is full of promise.
Yes, I can completely empathize with that. This morning, when I found out about my friends being evicted, malevolently. There is no possible justification for treating anybody the way they were treated by the police. We live in an absolute, total corporatist police state on this island. It's been imposed upon us. Anyone who doesn't realise that, they need to just look around them. And eventually, when I say eventually, it's happening now, Vinny. I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody who's either having problems with the police or problems with the banks or problems with council tax, another bogus operation, problems with parking tickets, speed and fines. These are all victimless crimes. And when you go into a court and you say, but where is the victim? What have I done wrong? I didn't run anybody down. I didn't kill anybody. I didn't rob anybody of anything at all. And yet you're saying, I've got to pay this fine, even though the law says it's illegal. Because they're issuing these fines without a judgment. And that renders them all void under the Bill of Rights, if the Bill of Rights had any validity at all, which of course it doesn't.
Extraordinary is the system that we're getting. And one thing that's quite important, actually, is the mind-bendingly massive genius of the evil of the system, all right? And it's not like the psychopathic elite are actually genius. What I think they've done is they've indoctrinated everybody into a belief structure and captured the genius over the last few centuries of inventors, politicians, artists, and many other walks of life that have influence on the society as a whole. They've indoctrinated them, captured their creativity, and exploited it for their purposes, not ours.
Yes.
To reverse such a system, and we were talking during the break about satanic reversion, how they'll take something good and just turn it upside down, make it evil. Like a star, for example, is actually really good. It symbolizes the head, the arms, and the legs, and how they're all tied together. It's a spiritual kind of thing. And then they inverted, literally turning a human potential on its head in order to use it as a negative energy spectrum. And I think what we're doing now, just as a generalization, what we're attempting to do is invert it back, because the permanent position of the star, meaning representation of humanity, whether it be on a flag or in the sky, has been turned upside down in a semi-permanent way, so that we don't even recognize the right side up anymore. And what we're attempting to do is simply put it back in its place, like something that's really important that has fallen off the mantelpiece that nobody has ever bothered to try and pick up before, because they don't even realize it's fallen off.
The general principles of natural law, as brilliantly described by Marc Passio in his latest video extravaganza. I highly recommend anybody who hasn't seen these videos to invest the time, because it truly is worth it. It's very hard to even stop watching for 7 hours. Very, very hard, as you were saying yourself before. Because the general principles of natural law are the foundations of the Treaty of Universal Community Trust. This is what we're seeking to bring about. And this treaty, there is nothing in international law which affects adversely the validity of this treaty. There is no possible valid legal objection to this treaty. The only thing that the communities, the indigenous sovereign nations standing under Universal Community Trust, the only thing we do not currently have is explicit formal recognition from already recognized independent sovereign nations. But while I can't say too much at the moment, we have in the offing, We're about to enter discussions with two already recognized sovereign nations. And once this happens, that will mean that UCT, Universal Community Trust, will have established upon these shores a new postal district, B, a new diplomatic district, and C, an alternative to the tyrannical system that has been imposed upon the world.
In other words, if you were to talk to the tyrannical system directly about UCT, it's there specifically to expose UCUNTS.
Correct. That's right. And to help everyone understand what needs to be done to reverse the system, to reverse engineer the ill effects of globalization. And scumbaggery.
Well, haven't you noticed it's actually quite interesting, is that physics saying for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. There was a story that I heard, and again, this is one of those stories that may or may not be true, but it's still a good story. There was a book in ancient Rome that allegedly had the future in it, and the Romans fought countless skirmishes to obtain this book. And when they read it, it told them that all of their grain would rot and that Rome would starve. And so in an effort to prevent this future, Rome confiscated the grain from everybody and put it all in one place. And then it went moldy. And they starved. Sometimes the very efforts that we put in place to prevent things from happening are indeed the progenitors of what we wish to prevent.
Exactly.
And I think that the elite themselves have sowed the seeds of their own demise by attempting to suppress our individuality, by attempting to suppress freedom, by attempting to suppress creativity. It has grown an even stronger urge of freedom and creativity within people who have managed to see it for what it is.
What they being the elite, what they never imagined was the unexpected qualities of every man and woman when their backs are pressed against the wall, The unexpected can always happen in those circumstances. Now, who do you know who is not having a hard time at the moment, Vinny? How many people do you know?
My mate Jono, but his, well, the thing is, actually, people always have a hard time with everything, right? Yes. However, you don't get affected by all hard times at the same time, right? Yeah. Let's say, for example, some people are suffering a bit of financial stress, but they've got a really good relationship with their partner, for example, that helps them through it. Some people have really bad relationships with their partners and it's really stressing them out, yet they've got no money worries. You see what I'm saying? In one way or another, inexorably, we're all being fracked at the same time.
That's right. That's right. And one thing that I have to say, that if there'd been anybody else who had done what I've done before I did it, I wouldn't have done it their way. I would have still done it my way. And if there's anything that I've tried to stress at all of the conferences or talks that I've given, it's first you've got to lose the fear. And once you lose the fear, you've got to understand there is no shortcut. There is no silver bullet. You've got to do this yourself. You've got to realize that you are a sovereign being, that you cannot be subjugated without breaching natural law. Everything that is happening to you that you don't like, you have a choice not to do it, not to participate, not to be complicit in the slaughter of innocence in your name. Mm-hmm. You can't say no to the tax man. You can't say no, I'm not going to register my children. You can even deregister your children. And it makes a massive financial impact upon the crown. We had it confirmed. There was a health worker came around to our house just to make sure that our daughter was doing all right once we refused to register. We were completely open about it. We opened the door, said, look, come in. You can see that she's thriving. We got nothing to hide here because we knew they'd leave us alone if we did this. And that's exactly what happened. And on the final time the health worker came, my daughter, who was two at the time, ran to the door, opened the door and says, come on in, have a cup of tea. And from that moment, she was completely charmed. She ticked all the boxes and says, you know what? I will get into trouble for saying this, but I think what you're doing is the future of parenting. And that's someone who works for the state. It's like she's ticking the boxes because she's doing that for her job, but she realizes what she's doing is not what's right for children. And she's virtually admitting that.
Mm. Well, I think it's like you need to put the examples in front of people. Yeah, I hear so many people who are only freshly woken up to this truth and still have many years of research, experience, relationship building and, shall we say, lifestyle changes to go through before they actually achieve their balance, have found their, found their chi, so to speak. And I think what's interesting is that instead of focusing on improving themselves, they mistakenly focus on hating on others. You're a slave, you're dumb, you're asleep, you're crazy, you believe in this insane system. While those things are true, is that you're prioritizing attacking others rather than defending yourself, and that makes you weak.
Yes, it does. It always does. There is absolutely no point in furthering the cause of divide and conquer, which they have used so often. You know, how many times have you suspected that there was an agent in your midst since you started doing this?
Not really ever, actually, because the only time when there actually was an agent in my midst, somebody hacked his account and got a fax that he sent to the FBI saying, why aren't you protecting me from these people that are exposing me?
Very good.
There was a story about how Hitler managed to divide and conquer his political competition in the 30s, early 30s, late 20s, I think. it was called Mr. Schmidt. Okay, he would come into his to communist meetings and so on and so forth, his political rivals, and he would tell everybody that there is a Mr. Schmidt in the room who is an agent who is trying to destroy their party. There was no Mr. Schmidt, but because everybody believed that there was, they started accusing each other and infighting, and then they were really surprised when this relatively unknown new political party rose so massively to power with so little opposition. And I think that's what's happening in the truth movement now, is that we have people within our midst who are simply telling us that there is a Mr. Schmidt when there isn't a Mr. Schmidt.
Well, I do understand where you're coming from with that, but I have had a completely different experience, which I'll now attempt to relate. I'll tell you that the first part of it, I got put on an MI5 watch list because I was down to make a series for the BBC when 9/11 happened, and I was meeting with heads of department, and I had some very influential producers on board with this TV series that I was writing, and I just had a conversation in the BBC canteen waiting for this guy as a head of department. He was meeting us in the canteen for some reason. And I just had a conversation with the couple of producers I was with and said, "Yeah, what do you think about 9/11, man? That something was definitely wrong there." He says, "Oh, you don't want to start talking like that. No, that nothing could be further from, I don't even want to discuss it." Straight away, shut down in flames. But of course, I wouldn't let it go. So I keep, no, you obviously haven't looked at it. It was this had been written. It was scripted. Surely you must have seen that. All the press releases must have been written in advance. They couldn't possibly get all that information together so quickly. And they go, no. And that people were listening, you know, and I thought, I didn't give a shit. I really didn't give a shit. But nevertheless, not for the first time in my life, it did come home to roost, because it's like all of a sudden, no one is interested in doing anything. They're letting me down as gently as possible. They don't want to provoke me. But suddenly everything just gets shut down. And then I found out that a couple of left-wing film directors were actually blacklisted in the 70s and 80s for their communist beliefs. And this was during a time when one of them's called Ken Loach, who's very famous. And this was at a time when MI5 had an office at the BBC. They had an office at the BBC until 1981. And the BBC claimed that they were using an office in the building, nothing more. Oh, not vetting every single BBC employee, including the stars, so-called, etc. Well, from that point, you see, I knew my communications were being bugged because I heard them on the line. You know, it was barbaric by comparison, the technology then. You know, it was easy to pick up. And I moved from London to Amsterdam, and I was living in a great place in Amsterdam, having a fantastic time. But I kept noticing people at the airport. I mean, I thought, you're getting paranoid. You're imagining it. It's not true. And then this one day, I was taking a flight on my own to Scandinavia, and I noticed there was a really odd-looking guy in Bermuda shorts and a flowery shirt carrying a bag, and he was looking at me, and he seemed to be everywhere I was, looking at me and then looking away. And so I thought nothing. I thought, right, I'm just going to get on with my business. And I went through passport control. He's just behind me. I put all the bags through, and I'm just picking up my bags at the end. All of a sudden, he puts his hand on my arm, said, "Where are you going? And what have you got in your bag?" I said, "It's just been through the X-ray." "Well, and who are you?" And he pulls out his bag, and it was Dutch undercover police, and they'd been tracking me. He said, "What have you got in there?" I said, "I've got some contracts in there. I'm taking them to a meeting in Denmark. You know, check. What did you think I had in there? Coke." And he's like, "Well, we didn't know." I said, "Come on, man. I've just been through the X-ray machine. What are you doing?" And anyway, he couldn't do anything. He had to walk away. But from that point onwards, I was quite wary, Vinny. So I get back to the flat, and I tell my wife at the time what had gone on. And, I mean, you know, we did laugh it off. But a few days later, we noticed that there was a flat across the canal from us. And there was a red light in the window. And it was an empty flat. And a red light just appeared from nowhere. It could have been a camera. And anyway, so we let it go past a few weeks, thought we'd humour them, and lo and behold, we could make out a camera in certain lights. There was a camera on the windowsill, and then a curtain appeared, and it was poking through a gap in the curtain, So I decided I would take the piss a little bit. So we had a balcony, and one Saturday morning, I rolled up a big fat one, and it really was a big fat one, and I put on my wife's purple dressing gown backwards with shades and a bandana, and I went out and I waved at the camera, and then I turned round and pulled the dressing gown apart and showed them my two big, fat, hairy ass cheeks. And within a few hours, they were gone. And they never came back. There was no light. There was no camera. It was wound up.
Yeah.
And I haven't really worried about it since then, but I've been aware of their presence. They have made a few moves.
Oh, yeah. And my story about the Mr. Schmidt is just how you can sabotage other people who are otherwise genuine. That's not to say that just because you're paranoid that nobody's following you.
That's right.
You know, because it does exist. The system does exist, and it's a big quagmire of suspicion. And what my point was is that if you are ultimately suspicious of absolutely everybody around you, just suspicious without any evidence for being suspicious, that's when you start destroying not only your own life and your social circles, but you start destroying your potential to actually positively influence those social circles. That's what's happened. I've seen so many people who are activists who have lost all social cohesion. You can't even have a conversation with these people. All the things that they're talking about with the scumbaggery and what have you checks out. It's absolutely accurate. But they don't have any relationships with people that last because they get suspicious so easily and their suspicions can never be quashed.
No, they can't.
Regardless of the amount of evidence.
That's why you have to give everyone the benefit of the doubt from the beginning. And you always know in your heart whether you can trust someone. You give them the benefit of the doubt regardless, even if you feel a bit uneasy. And I've never had that uneasy feeling, and I've never seen it develop into a situation where I could trust someone. I always knew immediately that I could trust the people that I trust. And it's always been that way, but I've always trusted my instincts on that. Mm. Nevertheless, I do also know that in 2008, via Google Ads, MI5 was advertising for operatives, and they were sending these advertisements to the job centres in Britain, and they were recruiting low-level operatives to basically spread rubbish, crap, and to be agent provocateurs on certain radical forums. And I've seen this again and again. You know, people will derail threads and the discussion just ends up going nowhere.
This is why on Twitter, Facebook and YouTube, which I use fairly regularly, there is a function on them that I think is the most important thing for everybody who uses these platforms to know and know how to use properly. The block function.
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. Right. Because you get all of these people, all of these scum, they have no thing at all that is in any way contributing to the conversation. It's derailing it, it's destroying it, it's changing it from its intended purpose. Once you notice those people, and they give themselves away, it's kind of like, you know when somebody with awful body odor walks into a room, you can frickin' smell them? It's kind of like that. It's sort of like this intellectual, dishonest odor that they exude, and you can just... It takes a while. I think in my 7 years of exposing to scumbaggery, I'm in my seventh year. It's taken a while for me to actually sort of get it. And now it's kind of like I don't even intellectualize it anymore. Before I had to think, before I had to analyze, before I had to question. But now it's like by instinct, just kind of like how a Marine can take apart and strip a weapon without looking at it.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. It's something similar has been said about myself a few times by one of my closest associates. So I understand where you're coming from. You can smell them. You can smell them. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that this is a decent place to wrap it up. I want to thank you very much for your time today and your honesty. And I actually do want to recommend specifically that people do check out your other works and what have you, because it's, despite this conversation being really, really good and in depth, it's not all there is to you. It's insufficient. There is more of higher value for the listeners to go and check out. And I want to encourage you, just personally, listeners, just go and frickin' do it, okay? Just go and do it, all right? I pay taxes to a degree. But my justification for doing that is so that I can interview all the people who don't and can teach you how to not do it either. So that one day I can hopefully contribute to a society where it will be recognized 100% for the fraud that it is, and those who refuse to pay them do not get the consequences that those who are pioneering the road ahead today are suffering from. And I want to thank you for taking it on the chin on behalf of myself and basically the entire human race who you, by proxy, are attempting to free. And it's an incredibly honorable thing, and it speaks well of humanity as a whole that people like you still exist despite all of the machinations of scumbaggery that are around us every day.
Well, thank you from the bottom of my heart, and right back at you, because, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, you know, either what you're doing or what I'm doing, and I think there's a lot of crossover as well. And I want to thank you for inviting me on your program and giving me the opportunity to spread this information further than it's ever been spread before. And I would be absolutely delighted to come back and talk again if ever you wanted to invite me. So,
Now, could you please recite your website one last time, and then we're all done.
It is self-realization.com. And I would also like to give a little plug to a new website that's just been launched this week by another trustee of UCT. It's called roguemail.org. And you can see a lot of very brilliant, prescient work on that site. I think that's about it for the plugs.
All right. Well, actually, one more. This is a listener-supported broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Without you and your donations, the show would not exist. I also want to thank you, the listeners who donate, for this. Also, I am moving house and getting married, and my missus' muffler on her car has broken in half, so I need about $2,500 within the next week or so. So if it's at all possible, if there's anybody out there who hasn't currently been bankrupted by the system, I'm sure there's like three, please donate some money at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Make a donation either into the bank account or through PayPal, and there's also a subscribe button there as well, so you can make regular contributions so that I can basically ease back on the begging for donations, because I only really beg for them when I really need them. And today I am begging you, begging please, begging on my knees at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood hasn't go ahead, make my news. Thank you very much. You are